You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 26th, 2009. This is episode 94, Old People Talking New Tech. It's time again for another episode of the Wells Tech Podcast, and joining me as usual is Sally Draper on this fine Tuesday morning as we record. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. How are you, and how are things in Sleepy Eye?
Well, things in Sleepy Eye are hopping. We're getting ready for back to school, and I've got one starting high school, so it's a big year for us.
It doesn't make you feel old, does it?
No, I'm young. Very young high school mom.
My youngest is a sophomore in high school, and I have one that's not even in school anymore, so that That did a number on me this summer, that I came to that realization that I'm not as young as I used to be. I can kind of ignore the birthdays as they go by, because those are just numbers. But when you see your offspring actually growing up around you, that's a scary thing.
Yeah.
Gail Potratz is with us as well from New London. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, guys. And the pressure is really on me today now, because after your conversation there, I'll have to admit that I'm waiting for my first grandchild to start kindergarten this year. So now you know where we stand.
Now that we got all that stuff out of the way, us old folk can talk technology, right?
Yeah.
And as usual, this is our once a month discussion on classroom-related technology. That's why we have Gail with us. She's the resident expert, and we're going to talk about a topic that is pretty hot right now within educational circles, and that's the concept of one-to-one computing.
Yep. Right off the bat, we probably should define what one-to-one computing is. We've got a link to include in the show notes to a Wikipedia definition of it. But basically, it's assigning a computing device. I won't call it a laptop, because we'll get into different flavors of that computing device later in our discussion. But a computing device to each student, even at an elementary school level, so that they have constant access to the internet and to educational tools to do the work that they need to do in school. So, and constant access ultimately means they could even take the device that's assigned to them home and work from home with it as well. So in the classroom, having some small portable internet-capable device at their fingertips for doing research on the fly.
Now, when you look at that concept in the context of all of our Wells schools today, I would suspect that there's not a lot of one-to-one computing initiatives going on. When I visit schools, and I do get around to a number of them, I see a lot of computer labs, you know, the dedicated room with a bunch of computers, depending on the size of the lab, of course. Sometimes there's three or four, sometimes there's 20 or 30. You know, most of our high schools are set up this way, where you have a class period where people go to the computer lab and they work on their typing skills or do research or whatever. But there's not a lot of this concept of one-to-one computing. Would you agree, Gail?
Well, I think that's true, Martin. In fact, if there are Wells schools that are heavily involved in this or starting this, I'd really like to get an email from them and touch base with them. Mm-hmm. This is something that I've worked on through the years, and I am going to be applying it this year in my eighth grade class, mm-hmm. class, not in the whole school, but kind of piloting something in the eighth grade class. And I've done it before, but technology's changed a bit, so I'm giving it another try and very excited to see what we can do. We're going to have quite a mix. Everybody will be able to have a computer all the time. Mm-hmm. Some are desktops, which means they will not be able to take it with them to go into another mm-hmm. classroom. However, they all have their student folder. They all have their own logins mm-hmm. account, so they whatever room they're in, they can pull up their stuff. There will be most of the 17 will have a laptop that can actually go with them around the building during the day. And I have one boy that asked if he could bring his own from home, which we're a Mac school, but he has a PC, but this is no problem. I'll put it on the network. And so he will truly be the one person who's really doing all the time access one-on-one computing.
Okay.
But the rest of us are doing a form of it.
Now, I would suspect that one-to-one computing has gotten a stronger foothold on college campuses, where most college students do have a computer, probably in many cases their own. But we've also seen initiatives where colleges are asking for or giving away devices. And again, it's not always computers. It could be iPods, those kinds of devices. We'll talk about that later, too. And then it's going to go down the chain. High schools are beginning to think about this. And then obviously last, and maybe that's what we're seeing with a lot of our elementary schools, is the elementary school level. And I suppose cost is a reason for that, right?
I think cost is a big reason, although the costs are tumbling.
Oh, yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
It's becoming more and more affordable to have this kind of setup. I think another key component of the picture is that the educator has to be committed to
right.
not just viewing technology as an extra thing, but an integrated thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if they have these machines at their disposal, that the topics presented and the exercises, that they have to do incorporate the technology and allow them to make use of it. So I think educators are probably the pivotal point here.
Yep. You mentioned we mentioned cost and the affordability of this. There are probably a couple factors contributing to maybe a more positive possibility that this could get some traction within some of our schools. One is these low-cost netbooks that are coming out, so they're in the $200 to $300 range, but also the software that's running on them. You have a plethora of open source software that is perfectly acceptable for classroom use, plus you throw on top of that Web 2.0 applications, so cloud computing. As our schools are more and more wired and broadband is more and more available, that just kind of sets a more reasonable landscape for this one-to-one computing to become a reality.
Right. The software costs in a school to maintain a school, the software costs are going down, actually, because mm-hmm. you're replacing some things with, like you said, Microsoft Open Office. Okay, that's free, so mm-hmm. there you go. Just doing more and more of that.
Right.
Right. And I guess we should say it's not Microsoft Open Office, it's Sun's Open Office.
Yeah,
so Microsoft probably wouldn't like us associating that with them.
Okay, but, can I say it this way, Sally? Replacing Microsoft.
There you go.
Okay.
and even down to the operating system that you can run on a Linux-based platform versus a Windows-based platform and have basically the same experience on these netbooks. So I definitely think the netbook has got a lot of potential there, although, Gail, you pointed out that they're running XP Home on these netbooks because they don't have a real powerful processor or a lot of memory at their disposal. They're basically set up to access the Internet, more or less. And so networking can be an issue with the netbooks. It's hard to make XP Home, communicate with our high-quality network scenarios and things, our secure networks.
Right, and I only really looked at the Lenovo netbooks. So there may be others out there that do that, and I know Lenovo must be moving toward that now with the new Microsoft system coming out. They must be able to include that because I can't imagine. You still need some storage when you're working on the cloud. Kids need to have their own folder on the server for certain things.
Mm-hmm. And with Web 2.0 tools, that's entirely possible, even if they're not on or inside the network. All they need is an internet connection. So you've got things like Google Docs and those kinds of things as well. When I think about the one-to-one computing concept, I guess it sounds like, Gail, you are providing the use of computers for the students. There's another angle to that where some schools are building the cost of a computing device into fees so that they essentially lease or own the computer over the course of their stay at a school, correct?
Right. There are places doing that now. That still seems, unless the equipment cost comes down quite a bit or we're able to set up a system that works and with quite a bit less money, I don't see that as really possible for many of our
elementary schools. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess the question becomes tech support, whether it's owned by the student ultimately or by the school or whatever. You know, how do you support, how do you manage the hardware and software update needs and, respond to the ones that get crushed or dropped or whatever it might be. And so, it's got to open up a whole lot more responsibilities there. The other angle I thought of, and this is kind of going back to, I have a son starting high school and how old I am, but anyway, he's starting with a laptop computer and they allow those at MVL and everything, but what about security? What about, the potential of something like that getting stolen? I know when I travel with my laptop, I take it with me everywhere I go and I do my best to, keep it in sight or in hand, at conferences and things like that. And so, I don't foresee that students are going to be that diligent about security. And maybe when everybody has one, security is a non-issue. But I just, that to me raises a red flag right there.
I guess that's why they make all those locks I see in the advertisements in the magazines. That is an issue
that
for
everybody.
Right.
Maybe we need to look into that for a pick of the week.
Well, like you say, you usually keep it in hand. That's what I do too when I travel. But, in a school, it's a little different. I guess we're pretty fortunate, and I'm not trying not to be naive, but we actually have had wonderful support with the treatment of the equipment and such from the students in our facility. I've had to deal with really, as far as vandalism or misuse or whatever, so few incidents over the years. I think if you use the computers like they're meant to be used, kids really do appreciate it and they really do value the equipment. I think that would go along with their laptops too and respecting each other's equipment there. They're pretty good about helping each other with it too, and
right. I think when we've been talking about this in the past, let's say a year or two ago, one of the cost prohibitive components of this whole setup was you felt that you needed a ruggedized, laptop, something that could be dropped, something that had, rubber edges or steel hinges or the whole bit. And that obviously got expensive, so that was prohibitive in that regard. Now that prices are dropping, that's not as much a concern. Still a concern, but a $200 netbook that gets damaged is a little bit different than a $1,500 notebook that gets damaged. So the balance has shifted, and that's a good thing. We probably, before we go on to maybe the benefits of one-to-one computing, just from the student's perspective and the teacher's perspective, is other devices that could be used in this one-to-one computing model. And Sal, you're a big iPod Touch user. That's something that we're seeing in classrooms as well as a computing device, as an educational device.
Right, and actually, as we were doing research for this show, that was the booming area. If you look on the web right now, that is the area where people are really beginning to use the devices in the classroom. And the applications for the iPod Touch are just really exploding as well. Mm-hmm. I found one website, iEducation Apps Review, that is just dedicated to reviewing applications that run on the iPod Touch platform for use in a classroom setting. Mm-hmm. So, and I believe it was the NECC conference this summer where I sat in on a presentation of someone that used them in a one-to-one computing type scenario in her classroom. And so definitely affordability is there. I guess you talk about netbooks in the $200 range. I've seen them in the $300 range and the mm-hmm. iPods in the $200 range. So mm-hmm. they're just slightly under, you know, the netbook pricing, at least at this point.
Right.
And really capable devices and small and portable and very easy to use. I've heard people talk about iPod docking stations where you could dock a whole bunch at once and get them all recharged. And, you know, so all the equipment vendors are getting on board for the school use of these devices.
Cool. Yeah, it was interesting to me at the MDMC conference. There were some districts down in the southern part of Wisconsin that had mentioned that some of their stimulus money was going to be used for purchasing iPod I don't call them carts. They have a different name. I can't think what they call them. But like you say, a box where they're all docked at the same place and time, and so they're already set to go.
Interesting. So we've got good news on the device side, which is enabling some of these conversations to even take place. But just the concept of one-to-one computing, how does that benefit the student, and how does that benefit the teacher in their ability to be more effective?
Well, one angle of that is, I think, you know, as educators, it's the job to prepare them for the world that they're going to live in. And obviously, the world that these students are going to live in is going to be with the internet and that kind of capability at their fingertips. So, you know, preparing them at an elementary school level on up to use the tools that are available has got to have huge benefit for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think the way we deliver education has a big impact on this. I know that off my classroom website, I have created different places where most of them are wikis. And the content for my lessons, a lot of it ends up being delivered online. Mm-hmm. So students get the directions online, do some research online. I mean, that's where the content is. That's where the creation of their material takes place. It's all happening there. So they need that all the time access. And once they get out in the business world, they're going to find that that's the way it works. So it's just another case of, are we really preparing students for the jobs of the future?
And as a teacher considers how to best use these devices, I assume that there's going to be a growing number of resources at their disposal as to, you know, how to take advantage of the fact that their students are wired.
Right. I think, you know, we'll see more and more of that. We certainly were able to tap into many resources that we'll include in the show notes right now. And that's the buzz on Twitter among educators. It's definitely the future.
Yep.
I suppose, as usual, Sally, we'll have a bunch of links if they're interested that they can find some of the resources we came across. And just looking at the notes for our show here, we've got probably, you know, 6 to 12, looks like real solid resources.
Yeah, lots of, you know, practical applications. You can read about people's experience with it and see what was good and what was bad and at least get a feel for it. If you're not ready to dive in yet, then maybe just having that vision for the future as you plan for the future of technology in your school campus.
And that's a great point, because I think our schools, churches and schools, are probably short in the planning and long on the kind of the reaction side of technology, where we're always seeming to try to catch up with technology. And I think the best implementations of any kind of technology rollout that I've seen in churches and schools are those that have a long lead time, that they've thought through the usefulness, they've thought through the budget implications, they've thought through the maintenance aspect, how are we going to support this going forward. I can't tell you how many times I've seen initiatives just die on the vine because that planning hadn't taken place. They thought, boy, this is a great thing, even as simple as a website, without consideration for maintenance, content development, marketing, those kinds of things. And the same would apply, I assume, to any kind of classroom technology. So there's a training component. There are considerations for upkeep of the hardware, software selection, on down the line. And yeah, that's not easy to do, to try and look ahead and figure out, you know, what's going to be the best for our school and how is this going to be a blessing to our students.
Definitely.
Thank you for saying
Go ahead, Gail.
Thank you for saying those things, Martin. those are very important things. They can't be said often enough. So true.
All right. So I think good things. And as we go forward in this brave new world of one-to-one computing, we would love to hear from anybody who's dipping their toe in the water here and your experiences with it so that we can share those with others. I'm sure there are very interested teachers and principals out there, and probably even some applications for other areas of education within our congregations that this applies to. I can think of confirmation class applications and those kinds of things. So it's exciting to see that moving forward finally, as it seems like all the components are coming together nicely. So good stuff. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to our news and tech section. And we wanted to just talk a little bit about something that has been missing in the cloud computing suite of services, and that's a database. Not just any kind of database, but a relational database. Microsoft announced that they're going to beta with MS SQL Server in their Azure environment, which is their cloud-based initiative. So to my knowledge, this is the first substantial relational database that is going to be in the cloud. And you say, well, what significance is there in that? And I think as I opened up this segment, I think there is some significance, but it's probably the last Office Suite item to hit the cloud. We have word processing in multi-flavors. We have spreadsheet software, Excel, and those kinds of things online. We definitely have PowerPoint kinds of tools, note-taking software, those kinds of things, email. But we really hadn't had a true relational database in the cloud.
Yeah, maybe people don't really understand that concept of relational database. And if they did, they'd understand the power of it. But it allows you to have different tables of information, different sets of information that are interconnected. Mm-hmm. So I guess my best example and where I see a real need in a congregational setting for a relational database is in the worship planning area. So let's say a pastor is putting together the bulletin for this coming Sunday, and there are components that feed that. There's the organist schedule and the hymns he's going to pick and the liturgical, you know, components, whether he's using page 26 or page 38, you know, of the worship and how that flows into the bulletin that he's putting together. There's the readings for that Sunday. All these different things could be contained in different tables and pulled together to form that kind of a bulletin. Mm-hmm. So having those things relate to one another, that the date of the pericope readings, you know, is part of that pericope table and then is thus connected to the date of the worship folder you're putting together. It becomes really, really powerful. And, you know, the thought of being able to do that kind of thing online is very exciting.
Yep. The beta is free, but it will not be free moving forward. I think there will be a charge for this, and I'm not sure what that will be. And there may be charity pricing, those kinds of things that if congregations are interested in that. Obviously, there's the ability to put membership databases and all kinds of things in that kind of a system. And I'm sure there'll be others down the road that will be perhaps in the open source arena that will be free. So this is probably just the tip of the iceberg, but I think that's good news that we're seeing those kinds of products out there. By the way, Sally, very impressed that you came up with those order of service page numbers. I'm still page 5 or 15, so 26 and 38, I think you're right on. Very nice.
So Martin, how old are your children?
All right. Well, you are the baby of the group, so that should make you feel a little bit better today. Let's go on to our picks of the week rather quickly. Gail, what's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is a simple and easy, useful, I hope, pick called Sign App Now. It's just SignAppNow, Sign App Now, .com. And what this is a simple and easy way to create sign-up sheets. Now, say you're having a ping pong tournament at noon hour in the winter at your school and you want to know how many kids would be interested in being involved in this. You could do one of two things. You can set this up. There's no sign-in or anything. You just go to this site, you start right in, and you say, this is a sign-up sheet for the ping pong tournament on Friday afternoon. People need to sign up by Thursday. And you can do one of two things. And you can email this to a group. Okay, so with your one-on-one computing, all your kids are getting their email, and they can do email and get this that way. Or you can also, what happens is once you create this and click create, you're sent a link to the sign-up sheet itself. And so you can connect that link off of your website, so you could just go to the website to get the page too. But I could see that there might be a lot of just quick and easy applications for this in a school, even in a church. If you had limited resources, you could even use this to sign up for Bible classes or
flower calendar.
Yeah, anything like that. So very quick and easy.
So this is basic email that gets posted, is that right? And then they click a link and they go to a web app, or how does that work?
You start, like, I'm creating the sheet, so I'm on the web creating the sheet.
Right.
And I can either, once I have it created, it actually, it's out there on the web with a link to it.
Okay.
So then you can send that link to your email groups, or you could, you know, just post it on your site and have a name, you know, sign up for this and click here, and you go to a web page that shows you that.
It's just a form creator without requiring you to have an account. Just really simple.
Yeah.
Very nice. I wish I had had this in high school. I ran a annual ping pong tournament in my backyard.
Okay.
Only if only there were computers and email when I was in high school, I would have been all set. But I can see a lot of applications for a simple, and I guess that's the key, a simple way for people to sign up rather than a complicated login and, password account creation. Here's a simple link, and here's the purpose of the sign-up sheet. If you're interested, click here. If you're not, you ignore it.
Right.
So just like you were talking about, this SQL Server Online, pushing the envelope, basically, pushing people to develop more, and hopefully there'll be, alternatives to it, or maybe open source or free alternatives one day. The same kind of thing, we've had online forms for a while, but now they're making it simpler. Mm-hmm. They're making it more straightforward. They're cutting out, a lot of the steps that used to be involved or whatever. And so we just continue to progress, and that's exciting to see.
Very good.
Yep.
Sally, you have a pick this week, I see.
I do, and this one is another one of those look into the future kind of things. I have a hardware pick. It's called a Power Stick, and it's from a company called EcoSol. And
it's not a deodorant, is it?
No. Power Stick kind of sounds that way. But actually, it's about the size of a stick of gum, and it's a portable charger. So you charge this device from your USB port on your computer, and then it can charge your mobile phone or your personal digital assistant or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So just plug it in whenever your battery's running low. You don't have to be near a power source or a computer or anything like that. You carry this small device and it does it for you. Comes with multiple ends that plug into the different devices that it supports. And I guess just kind of, again, a look to the future that things are getting less complicated in terms of, being able to charge all these devices that are now a big part of our life. I just thought it was an impressive little tool.
Any idea of length of time this would keep a charge? Let's say if you're plugging your iPhone or your cell phone or whatever it is into it.
I've got a page here of technical specifications. I don't know that they get into
And it may
a lot
you know,
of
your mileage
details.
May vary kind of a thing too, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
But they're touting it definitely as a green, alternative. We know that there's lots and lots of chargers and things, but this charges all your devices, reducing your need for, multiple charging devices and things like that. It says it can outlast most devices with 1,000+ cycle lifespan. So.
Mm. Cool. Well, that's good news for all iPhone users, because that really sucks on the iPhone. That was one of the real downers moving from another smartphone platform where I could get 2 or 3 days, on a charge, mm-hmm. to the iPhone, where you're good if you get a day. Plus, the iPhone doesn't have a replaceable battery. So, and I think I think a lot of smartphones are that way too. So, the alternative to something like this would be, get an additional battery, but those are expensive too. Any idea on cost for this?
I think it's around $50 to $60. I remember looking at that, but I don't have it right in front of me.
Okay. Not too dissimilar from a second battery for a cell phone, for instance. Plus, mm-hmm. you can use it on multiple devices, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
I know they're available at Best Buy. I looked at it there.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Very good. Good pick. Normally you don't have a hardware pick, Sally. You're kind of on the educational website pick gal.
That's right. I have to throw you a curve every
branching
once in a while.
Out. Okay. Well, I'm going to take a pick, a web pick this week. This is for all Firefox users. I came across this about a week or so ago. And what's kind of neat that Firefox is doing, or the Mozilla project is doing, is they're now putting together or giving you the ability to create collections of add-ins. Firefox has a lot of add-ins or extensions, and people can put a bunch of extensions together that will produce a nice feature set for Firefox. And this one happens to collect 4 different extensions or add-ons that really have made my browsing experience a little bit better. 2 of the things that I use most often when I open up Firefox are Gmail, which is what I use for all my personal email, and Google Reader. We've talked about both of those probably ad nauseum to our listeners over the last year and a half. So I constantly found myself clicking on the shortcut to Gmail, clicking on the shortcut to GReader or Google Reader, just to probably 2 or 3 clicks every time I wanted to get to those web pages. What this does, or what this collection of extensions does, is it allows you to create those applications in tabs that are permanently attached to your tab bar across the top. And not only does it make them permanent, they call them perma-tabs, but it gives a little favicon or fav icon. I'm not actually sure how you ever pronounce that, but that's that little icon that appears in your in the URL, top URL. It's a little symbol that represents the website. So that favicon sits on the tab. So that's the size of the tab, is basically the size of the favicon. And then there's a couple more extensions that puts the number of messages or RSS feeds, unread messages or unread RSS feeds, right over the favicon. So up in my upper left on my tab bar in Firefox, I've got one little Gmail favicon that shows me how many unread messages, and one little favicon for Google Reader with how many unread RSS posts are there. And so they're always just one click away on the tab. I don't have to open up a larger tab. They're just permanently there. Big time saver for me, and I got a quick glance at what's going on, how many email messages are sitting there for me, how many Google Reader items are unread. Just a very simple thing, but and free, of course, but makes a difference in productivity. So I'm really liking it so far.
And I am just willing to lay down a bet that you learned about this on Lifehacker.
I did.
I see Gina Trapani's name all over it, and she's the Lifehacker superstar.
She built one of the 4. She built the collection, and she built one of the 4 extensions, and I think it was Better Gmail 2, which is one of the 4.
Well, she built the Better Reader too. Her name's on that one too. She's a superstar.
That makes sense.
In Mississippi, we say fave icon, just for the record.
Okay. Even though you're not in Mississippi.
Yeah, well.
Apparently it's Sleepy
still
Eye,
got
too.
My heart. Yeah.
Fave icon. Okay. Well, I'll go with that. How about that? All right. So we'll put a link to that collection, which I think is a great concept, too. That's not my pick, but I didn't. That's a fairly recent release from Mozilla, the ability to collect some of these extensions, and it makes a lot of sense. So it's kind of a good way to grab a bunch of things that work nicely together. So if you're a Firefox user, this would be a good pick for you.
Definitely.
All right, moving on to community feedback. It was a kind of a light week. Everybody's going back to school, so we should be able to zip through these, unlike past shows where we probably spent a majority of our time in feedback. So who's talking to us this week, Sally?
Well, we heard from Pastor Aaron Fry, who's out in Michigan.
Yep.
And Aaron is our resident Logos expert. Mm-hmm. He is quite the user of Logos, and he actually pointed us to Dropbox. I think we've talked about Dropbox before, mm-hmm. But he says it's working quite well for Logos syncing.
Oh,
he's
really?
He's using a free account, and he could do it with resources, too, if he paid, you know, for their paid-for mm-hmm. account.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can remind us, Martin, of what Dropbox is exactly.
Dropbox is basically a cloud location for file storage.
Right.
And it allows you to post things and download things. And apparently, now I'm not sure of the context of what he's syncing on Logos. You know?
I'm guessing across computers as he's making his notes and things.
Ah, that makes sense.
Within Logos, he's able to get those from computer to computer.
That does make sense. Yeah, and I hadn't thought of that use for Dropbox. I've often thought of Dropbox as a file sharing application where you want to collaborate. It has some great collaboration features, for instance. But syncing across your own computers is a great use for that.
Sure. Next up, via Twitter, we also heard from Jason Schmidt, who's a teacher at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska. And he tweeted that ABC Teach has free memberships for undergraduates studying education and also for their professors. ABC Teach is basically a paid-for education site where just tons and tons of resources are shared, and normally you would have to have a subscription to make use of those. But as students studying to be educators, they want to promote the site, obviously, and help you understand the capabilities, the functionality that's there, and the vast resources as well. And so they're offering free membership for those undergraduate students. So if that's who you are, if you're studying to be a teacher, you definitely want to check out the ABC Teach website, and we'll have a link in the show notes to the place to get the information about signing up for the free account.
Great tip. I just am constantly amazed at the number of educational resources that are out there, stuff that teachers, free stuff that teachers could take advantage of with very little effort and seemingly of good quality.
Definitely. It's almost endless. So we're just excited to be able to tap into it, and hopefully, you know, our listeners will pick and choose and find things that fit their needs.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yep.
All right.
Last up, we heard from one of our own. We heard from Adam Miller, who's actually a programmer in the technology office,
mm-hmm.
and he's also a Wells Tech listener, so good choice there, Adam. But anyway, Adam listened to our most recent show where we talked about back to school with technology, and he had some additional ideas specifically for college students, just, you know, focusing more on the technology being used at the college level, and also how it's being used on a campus ministry setting, and keeping in touch from the home congregation with the students that are off to college. So lots of good ideas there. Maybe we'll do an additional show just kind of focusing on those things.
Oh, for sure. And, yeah, there's, I think, lots of different dimensions or different directions we could take with those kinds of those needs as compared to maybe the elementary school level too, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Good suggestion, Adam. And if you'd like to contribute to the show, there are a multitude of ways to do that. First and foremost, you go to our website, wellstech.wells.net, and leave a comment there. Also there, you would find all the other channels through which you can talk to us. wellstech@wells.net is our email address. If you want to leave us a voicemail, we would love to have that, 414-375-2334. That's a Skype-in number, those of you that are familiar with Skype. So you're going to get a Skype voicemail, and you can leave your message, and we'd be happy to play that on the air, so to speak. You can tag anything in Delicious with Wells Tech. We constantly check that if you'd like us to discuss something on the web. We also have a Facebook presence, Wells Tech, facebook.com/WellsTech, yes?
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
It's our fan page, so you're more than welcome to visit us there. And last but not least, a very great resource that I wish more people would take advantage of, and that's the Wells Tech Listserv. Lots of people on that, ready and willing to answer your technology questions, and we would also share those on the show as well. So no shortage of ways to get with us. Gail,
another
yes?
good use for the listserv, another good use there. I've gotten several responses to people for collaborative projects with other schools this year.
Mm.
So if you're looking for another classroom to do something with during the year, that's a just put it out there. I've always gotten somebody.
Very good. All right. Next week. Actually, next week, we're not quite sure what we're doing yet. We will be here, God willing. But the topic is we're efforting kind of a special panel discussion. And I won't tell you what it is in case we can't come through with it. But it will be interesting. So it's worth tuning in. Or another continuing discussion on Clay Shirky's book, Here Comes Everybody. We're up to Chapter 10, which is entitled Failure for Free. Both words that are thrown around pretty generously when you're talking about the web, because you can try things for little or no cost, and that's what that chapter is about. So tune in next week for that. Let's close the show with the music of Stephen Bautista, his song Trying to Catch the Wind from his album Abandon. Thanks everybody for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
My thoughts race on through a never-ending, trying to get my mind around all your wondrous ways, struggling to figure out the mysteries of your plans, finding that I can't grasp what's firmly in your hands, 'cause I'm out of my, I'm way out of my league when I try in vain to comprehend the things I can't conceive. It's too much to fit in this little mind. I wouldn't know where to begin. 'Cause trying to understand your wondrous way is like trying to catch the wind. My mind takes off on an intellect wind, intent on reasoning through how I was safe from sin, I'm left to trust in you, 'cause I'm out of my element. I'm way out of my league when I try in vain. Like try.